Welcome back to our special three-part series of the Saracast as we explore grief, loss, and social-emotional learning. I'm your host, Sarah Lahane. This is part three, the final part of our special series for SEL Day. If you're joining us for the first time, make sure to catch the first two parts of this series where we discussed what grief looks like and how social-emotional learning helps us to process grief and loss. I'm grateful to be back with our expert guests, David Adams, CEO of Urban Assembly, George Hagman, psychoanalyst and therapist who specializes in grief, Tiffany Papa George, author of My Yellow Balloon, a book for children about grief and loss, and Rebecca Sofer, co-founder and CEO of Modern Loss. Today, we're sharing ways that educators and parents can support children through grief.
So now that we've kind of painted the picture of what grief and loss is and can look like, especially for folks who are new to it, who are experiencing it this year for the first time, what do we do as parents, as educators? How can we support students through grief? Dave, can you kick us off with this one?
Sure. I've been inspired recently by a TV show called WandaVision that's on Disney Plus. And there's a character, he's an android. The character, he says, "What is grief if not love persevering?" And so I think we just have to be able to sit in the space, right? We feel grief because we loved and that which we've loved is no longer with us. And so that grief is a reflection and a reminder of the love we had for that person. And so I think it's okay to just sit with. I don't know if there's anything to do with it. We just feel it and recognize that that person impacted us in a way that has survived beyond their actual being here on earth with us. And I think that's a beautiful thing to have, is that enduring love that we've had for that person.
The idea of enduring love that is really resonating with me. We, in the end of December, lost my grandfather to COVID, and I had to explain to my 3.5-year-old who knows and loves and shares lots of memories with her great-grandfather that he had died. We were going to the funeral. We did a small service in Maryland and we were traveling together. And I, you know, quickly was scouring the internet for how do you explain death to a 3.5-year-old? And something that resonated with me, which is kind of akin to what you're saying, Dave, is this notion of a child, the way a child eats an apple, just taking a bite, putting it down, taking another bite, putting it down, and continuing to come back to eating this apple. And that has been my experience with Sidel, my daughter, the 3.5-year-old, of explaining it to her and her sitting with it and kind of honoring his memory and her experience with her great grandfather, and then moving on to, you know, her snack or whatever we're playing with. And then hours later, coming back to it and asking me a question. So this idea of sitting and processing and enduring love is really beautiful. George, something that you said to me when you were helping with episode 4 of the Emotion Motion podcast is that we need to show adults, caregivers who are doing exactly that for children, who are showing up, who are sitting with the child and not trying to necessarily solve the problem and answer all the questions, but show love and support.
One of the things that I discovered early on in working with adult survivors of a parent loss was that it wasn't the death that was really damaging to them. It was the effect of the death on their family, and most importantly, on the surviving parent. Almost every case I discovered, the surviving parent began to fail in their ability to provide safety, provide ongoing parenting. And the biggest trauma for the kid was not just losing one parent, but losing the other. So my first paper was called Double Parent Loss. So, and it didn't lose the surviving parent to death. They lost it through the fact that that parent failed to have the supports and the resources that they needed to continue to parent their kids. So a lot of attention, I think, needs to be paid to the needs of the parent. of children who have suffered a bereavement. It is the most important issue. The child has a process that they need to go through, but they can't go through it if they're worried that the family won't continue, that they're preoccupied with the health of their parent. I had to bring my mother to the emergency room after my father died repeatedly because she was having trouble. So the fact that if there's no viable surviving parent to provide for the kid's mourning, his grief will be truncated, distorted, it'll be prolonged. So you really do need to put the mask on the parent first. And then they can attend to the child in terms of love, in terms of helping the kid understand what happened, what they're feeling, but also assuring the kid. Like we did this at Newtown with the children, it was as simple as saying, you'll be okay. We'll be okay. And being able to say that when you mean it, rather than like with a lot of parents who are really afraid that it's not going to be okay, because it isn't.
What would you say then to the adults who really don't feel like they're okay or they're not going to be okay? It's hard to take care of myself when I have to take care of my children, or I'm worried about losing my job, or I really do question what's going to happen. Where do you begin? What does that look like?
Well, you need to, if you're working with them individually, for instance, as a therapist, you can't just talk about things. You have to really help them in terms of their daily needs, the real fears that they have in terms of their life and family. Money is often a very important thing. The ability to keep a job, the ability to keep your house. You need to deal with the concrete and the emotional needs of the surviving parent. But, you know, we talked about what needs to be done. You know, this Recovery Act that was just passed in Congress is the type of thing socially, which is exactly what's needed. The fact that people can get a little bit of money so that they can pay their rent and stay in their apartment so they don't have to drag the kids to a shelter or to somebody else's place. The resources that are made available to families will have a big impact on the experience of children in their bereavement and experience of their grief. So there's multiple layers and multiple sort of psychological services that can be provided, but also concrete resources in terms of how to deal with the type of trauma you've suffered and the losses that you've incurred.
So let's talk about the role of community in moving through grief and loss, whether that is school community in the case of urban assembly or online community in the case of modern loss. How can community help us move through these times? What can that look like?
When it comes to creating meaningful and impactful community surrounding themes such as grief and loss, at least in my experience running Modern Loss for nearly 8 years online, I have found that it can be such an incredible place to pull people together because, you know, and I'm just specifically talking about online, not to mention all of our offline communities, but online, you know, we have people who would otherwise like not have easy access to grief, you know, bereavement organizations or grief counselors. Maybe they're in the middle of nowhere. Maybe they, you know, because of work, constraints or financial constraints, they don't have all the access or childcare constraints that somebody else does. And with the low touch way, you can reach people and pull them out of their isolation and help them feel seen and recognized, and that their stories of grief are being like divided up among many, many shoulders in that community and carried alongside them. And that goes so far in making somebody just feel witnessed and seen. So I feel like community, at least, you know, for what I do, is everything. I don't think it ever replaces like an amazing counselor or, you know, sometimes medication, but, you know, peer-to-peer support and community is just, it can be like a magic bullet sometimes.
Dave, what does this look like in a school community?
I think one of the interesting things about the time we're in is that for most of human history, mourning, it was a public act, right? And if you look at most cultures, grief is publicized, not privatized. And for reasons that I'm not quite sure of, we have decided that grieving is an intrapersonal act and an interpersonal act rather than a community act, right? If you look at the military, I've been in the military for 18 years, grief is publicized through ceremony, right? And most cultures do this. If you look at sitting Shiva, these are notions of publicizing and sharing this grief. And it's always been interesting because, and I'm not trying to sound funny on this, but when something happens in a school, they drop these grief counselors in, and these kids are like, I don't know who these people are. And like, I don't really want to talk to them about my feelings. I don't know them, right? It's not nothing personal. It's just that that's not where the bonds are, and people need to process things through relationships. So I agree with this idea of from isolation to community. And I think one of the things that would help us is to just revisit some of these ceremonies and rituals that we developed as humanity to process some of these concepts in community, so that we had a shared understanding of who we are and what it felt like, and that we were all saying, yeah, this is what pain feels like. In the context of schools, I think it's been a difficult piece because most of our structures and systems deal with things like emotional first aid responders, where, you know, they goodwilling and meet a positive intent, but they drop folks in and they're like, hey kid, do you want to talk? And the kid is like, no, you know, here's a blanket. And kids like, get away from me. And I think when we understand what rituals mean, how we process emotion, then we can be in community and allow ourselves to understand what is it that we're feeling.
But what we did in Newtown, I think, David, was very much keeping what you're saying in mind, because I went in with I was the head of a team that went in of mental health professionals. And one of the things we wanted to avoid was being the psychotherapists to the school. You know, we knew the kids didn't want to talk to us if we went in and set up offices and had them come in to talk to us. So what we tried to do is intervene to support the school and allow the school to function normally, with the idea that the mourning would occur because there's a social group and an institution that is alive and that's processing the feelings, that it wouldn't be us. But our job was to sort of find stress points and provide certain services that would maximize the school's ability to manage in this situation and provide the kids with the security, the sense of relatedness, the structure, which they could then feel safe to mourn in. And we really purposely tried to avoid what you're talking about, because that would have been a disaster. So we took a whole nother perspective on it, which was very effective for that school.
Yeah, and I don't want to take too much time on it, but I know narrative storytelling played a huge role in creating that space, right? Like, how do we tell stories that allow us to manage our relationships with ourselves and those who are deceased? And so I just recognize that the role of storytelling matters here as well. And there's some vestiges of this, like when you look at Awake and people come up and they're like, Dave was a good guy, you know, he played basketball with me. But those are isolated in space and time now, as opposed to, you know, we used to have formal periods of mourning that were designed to help process grief through structures.
One of the things also, if the social rituals are poorly used, how does society process these losses? What happens to society as a whole if we haven't been able to really mourn as a nation sufficiently? And the absence of traditional rituals is a problem.
Tiffany, I know you've done work in this area.
I work with kids in schools all the time. And my favorite is, I used to say, bring me in before anything happens. Let me come in. Let's get this in their bones before anything happens. And about 2 weeks into a quarantine, I had to go through my own little bit of mourning, knowing I could never really say that anymore. Something had really happened on a global scale. And what kids, to get them through the process, we have to first acknowledge this sucks and it's hard and they're going through something.
acknowledgement is always, in my humble opinion, first. And then we have to get their feelings from the inside to the outside. We have to help them express it. This can be done in all different ways in schools. It can happen through writing, through art. And this is where I really believe art and creativity comes in, because to me, in my own experience, and what nature has taught me, is that the antidote to devastation is always creation. So we get them creating and doing an action step as a school community that can look like putting their art out for their parents online or offline, where they can go in. My favorite is when they can go in and actually walk through the school and experience their child's emotions through art. Like they're walking through the art installation of their children's emotions.
This is obviously very personal to me and to Move This World. Two reasons. One, because we use ritual and routine to build a sense of safety and security so that kids and adults can identify, express, and manage their emotions freely. So recognizing that when I have a set routine and I have structure, it gives me a sense of stability from where I can take risks and explore myself and connect with others more deeply. And two, you mentioned the use of art and creativity, and everything that we do and Move This World is rooted in techniques from expressive arts therapies and creative practices. So acknowledging that cerebrally talking about loss or trauma is one thing, and then connecting mind and body is another, and understanding stress and what that feels like in my body and what that looks like in someone else is much more profound than just having a conversation intellectually about it.
Unfortunately, this past year has been the great equalizer in normalizing conversations about grief and loss. And given the traumatic and tragic events in Georgia and again in Colorado, it doesn't feel like it's getting better. What we can do for now is talk about the loss, attempt to understand ourselves and one another more deeply, and give our children the tools to do better than we're doing right now. Thank you for listening. If you found this series helpful, I hope you'll share with a friend, family member, or colleague as we support each other through the difficulties of grief and loss. And if you're listening on Apple, please subscribe and leave us a review. We'd love to know what resonated with you. Next week, you can catch the newest season of another podcast from the Move This World Audio Network, the Emotion Motion Podcast for children and their grownups, which invites families and educators to practice social-emotional learning through participatory storytelling. Listen to a sneak peek of season two now.
Hi, what's your name?
Hello, I'm Bobby.
Hi, Bobby. I've never seen a fish like you before.
Yeah, I'm a blowfish. My school just moved to a nearby reef. We used to live in Seaweed City, but after the shipwreck, a lot of our seaweed got destroyed, and we needed to find a new place to live. My little brother and I really miss Seaweed City. They had the best sea lettuce ice cream.
Really cool.
We had lots of places to play hide and seek.
And listen to what they share.
You can find the Emotion Motion podcast on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe now to listen to season two as soon as it airs. Thank you for tuning into the Saracast today. I loved spending this time with you. Before you go, join me for one final breath and hold in your mind a word or phrase that you are taking away from this conversation. Breathe in and breathe out. If you liked this episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find all of our episodes on movethisworld.com. The Saracast, Conversations in Social Emotional Learning, is produced by the Move This World Audio Network. Move This World supports social emotional learning for students, their families, and their school communities through evidence-based curricula rooted in creative expression and movement. You can find additional resources to support SEL in your district, school, classroom, or home on our website, movethisworld.com. I'll see you next time.